Welcome to the Foolish Adventure Show, where guru hype is banned, lifetime value of a customer is king, and the internet business has replaced the J-O-B as the path to financial success and personal freedom. Now, here's straight talk about making a living online with your host, Tim Conley.
Welcome to another episode of the Foolish Adventure Show. I'm your host, Tim Conley, and this is Internet Business Radio. And today we're going to talk about a subject that I love and I hate all at the exact same time. I've got Alyssa Doucette on here, who is a fancy pants writer, and we're gonna talk about how to be a good writer online. So what's up, Alyssa?
Nothing much. Just got back in the States, hanging out. Talking writing.
Yeah. I don't know if we should let everybody know about our, time together that we shared in a remote Southeast Asian island, tropical island together.
It was a beautiful time, Tim.
It was magical. we got to actually meet face to face there in Puerto Galera, which was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
And so to let everybody know, I always mess up like introductions. So that's why I like ask people, like, can you give us a little background? Like, what is your background as a writer?
My background as a writer is completely haphazard. I actually studied writing in college. I was a dual major in creative writing and classical studies. After I decided that I probably couldn't hack it as a vocal performance major, I decided I wanted much more solid career goal degrees. So creative writing and classical studies seemed the obvious way to go on that one. And after that, I then immediately got a job selling life insurance. Again, the logical steps just seemed to fall right into place. Worked at that for about 7 years, got moved into a field management office, managed life insurance sales for the state for about 3 years, and then basically walked into one of those fantastic January, let's sit down and set your annual goals meetings. And I was kind of told basically, like, you shouldn't stay in this position anymore. You either need to move on to your own agency or you need to move on to a more executive career track because you're kind of going to burn out and stagnate here and we don't want that to happen to you. So at that point in time when I kind of realized what my future ambitions were, I had been blogging for about 8 months. My site tagline was actually Musings and Ramblings. Just to give you an idea of the extremely pinpointed structure of my blog. And
solving real world problems right there, weren't you?
Exactly. Anything I could write about, I did. And somehow people picked up my blog posts and writing. They enjoyed them. It was a pretty cool thing. And I ended up talking to my best friend at the time, being like, yeah, they want me to take this, gig. They want me to keep going in the company, everything else. I said, but something just doesn't feel right. Like, I am a weird, weird person. I actually loved my job. I actually was super excited about the potential of moving into these other positions. But somehow, something just inside didn't feel 100% like that was the move I had to make. And I realized if I took these jobs, pretty much the writing would be done because I'd have to devote myself for a number of years to getting to the place that I'd need to be in those. But if I went to writing and I totally sucked at that, then I could always go back and throw myself on the mercy of my company that I left on extremely good terms with. So I decided that I would do that. And people were a little bit crazy and they picked me up for syndicated columns. Some major media outlet here in Portland, Maine, for reasons I still don't 100% understand, gave me my own online relationship column. quite possibly the worst person to write about relationships, but they thought I was funny. So, and then I got my column on Forbes. I started writing for different websites, different magazines, and kept going after that for about a year and a half. And then through the power of internet connections, Mr. Sean Ogle, I met the dudes at Tropical MBA, Dan Andrews and Ian Schoen. Featured them in an article that I did on location independence and kind of the new industrial revolution of the laptop and being able to kind of build a business anywhere you wanted to in the world.
Right.
And 2 weeks later, they posted one of their now defunct, but at that time infamous internships, in which they would pay you an Asian cost of living stipend and pay your living expenses to come over and help them build their businesses. But this time, the business they were building was their blogs, their podcast, their content side of the business. And between being really dedicated to their brand and their message of kind of helping people create personal freedom and opportunity through stuff, because that's what I had just done. And the fact that I would get to kick it at a 3-bedroom villa in Bali.
Yeah, that didn't hurt. You know, go swimming, just jump in the pool. And
it was a pretty good perk to the compensation package.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. And then you know, we got to meet and we were chatting there. And so that's when I asked you there. I was like, oh, you know, what we should do is sit down and record. But then, like, the audio was just horrible. The ability to get a decent recording there was pretty bad since there was construction going on next door. And it was just impossible.
That construction, those guys worked for like 2.5 weeks, and I don't think I saw a single thing get completed. Did you notice that?
It's not that important, really. I don't think. You know, you got to keep your job going.
That is the best. If they did their jobs too well, they'd be out of jobs.
Right, so. Right. So, you know, it's going to take a while to build a big building like that. So, yeah. So I wanted to talk to you about becoming a writer and being a good writer, because it's such a critical skill these days, being able to get out into the world either as a blogger or even me. I don't really blog much. You know, I may write a post here and there, but mostly I'm doing a podcast. But writing is still a critical part of any kind of communications, especially online.
Yeah, so, definitely.
So I was kind of playing around with, like, you know, what to title this thing, like, you know, how to no longer suck as a writer, that because that's kind of what I do is completely suck as a writer.
Not even.
Well, you know, it's that tricky thing called grammar. I just don't like to use it.
Yeah.
Or at least use it properly. So
that's, you know, I as a writer and editor, I definitely have that kind of hair on the back of my neck, fingernails on chalkboard reaction to grammar. But that's, I often realize that the problem is not other people so much as me. And that's kind of one of my biggest feelings on grammar, is as long as you're getting the general point across, like, that's really what matters.
Right.
So especially online.
So for me, it's like, you know, how can I become a great writer without, you know, like, doing work? Because I think that's been the biggest problem with me, is that I don't feel I'm disciplined enough to become a really good writer, you know, like to really get into the craft of writing. So hopefully I can, like, pull some shortcuts out of you. Like, like, is that even possible? Am I just being delusional here?
I'd say you're kind of like an Arnold Palmer of delusion. You're about like half and half. it's definitely, I think a lot of writers, having spent so long building our craft, and unfortunately, a lot of people will say that they're writers, and then you read their writing and you realize that they're, again, like a half and half type writer, and there's a lot of stuff they could do to improve, but you don't want to be that person who's like a total jerk and says, you know, yeah, it's really good you're a writer, but. So I think there's a very big misconception out there that you have to sit down and write thousands of words a day and devote, you know, hours on end to building the craft and everything, which totally isn't the case.
Right, right. You know, I sort of prepped for this. I actually have like one word prompts on my piece of paper here. So one of the things that I think a lot of people have issue with is ideas. Like, well, what do I write about? How do you go about like crafting an idea and turning that into something that's readable?
Well, there's a couple different ways, and it really depends. For me, the biggest thing that I always go back to is what's kind of the core message, the key message of whatever outlet I'm working for. If it's my own site, if I'm working for a client, if I'm working on Tropical MBA stuff, whatever I'm writing, I really want at the end of the day, the message that's in the article to serve the core message in some way. So it's kind of amazing how easy it is to craft things when you understand what that core message of your, I use the word brand for lack of a better term, even though the word brand is also slightly like fingernails on a chalkboard to me, because it's a little bit overused. But basically you come up with an idea, and I'm a super geek. I don't use electronics. I still use old school notebooks and pens. I carry them around with me everywhere. I usually have at least two on me at any time, unless I have my tiny little girl purse. And if I come up with an idea, I just pull out my notebook and write it down. And when I sit down to work on something, I kind of evaluate the idea and decide if it's going to fit that core message. And if it fits the core message, then writing it in conjunction with that becomes really easy.
Okay. Yeah, I think there's a really key lesson there is you called it the core concept, and Dan Andrews likes to call it the narrative. And I think that for like Foolish Adventure, I think that's been something that's missing. And I told that to Dan last night when we were on a webinar together. I said, you know, I feel like the narrative is missing. And I was thinking about that this morning, was that I think it's because I see that there's so much to know in creating a business, let alone an online business, that it's like, oh my gosh, I just want to tell you all the different things that you need to know. And so there's just so many topics, and I'm like jumping all around them without giving them a cohesive structure that ties them all together around a theme.
I definitely struggle with that same. I'm much better. It's always easier to fix everyone else's stuff instead of your own. Anyone who looks at my online presence for me personally will notice that I am somewhat disjointed. I have multiple ventures in multiple different arenas, and I lack that core message myself sometimes. Kind of the best way I've described it to people is exactly like you said. It's almost like an upside down funnel. And like, instead of pouring everything down, you're pouring everything up to one basic idea. Not necessarily like what you want to impart, but what you want people to get from you.
Okay.
That's kind of how I always think of my core message, and my company's core message, and the brands I write for's core messages is what at the end of the day did they want their customer experience to be.
Okay. Yeah, I'm definitely taking notes, because it's like this is something that I really want to implement in Foolish. So that's why I have you on here. This it's like I was going to say that this episode's pretty self-indulgent, but well, all of Foolish Adventure has been fairly self-indulgent. So
I have to say that's I like the self-indulgence of Foolish Adventure and of different brands that I see doing that, because there's a camaraderie to being able to see people struggling with and going through the same stuff at the same time that you are. It's sometimes a little bit painful to listen to podcasts or to read blogs from people who either have their stuff so much together or appear to have their stuff so much together that you feel like you are completely inferior.
Right.
And I, for me personally, I love listening to the experts, and I sometimes feel a little bit less though so about the so-called experts.
Right.
But yeah, I tend to gravitate much more towards the people who are real and going through the same stuff that I am.
Okay. So I want to get into this like next part from, because I've got like ideas, and then the next one here is clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So I come up with an idea and I write it, and then I look at it and I edit it a couple of times, and then I still am not sure if it's clear, like if my point has gotten across. And sometimes I won't know. Like sometimes I'll just get comments in a post that'll say, "Oh yeah, that was great. I love the ideas that you brought up in this." But then, of course, the people who don't agree, a lot of times don't, you know, say anything. Or if they don't get it, they may not say anything. So how do I know if I'm actually being clear? If I'm actually writing with clarity?
That one's super hard. Especially in the online space. I think that commenters and vocal people are definitely extremely valuable, and you have to pay attention to them and listen to them. But I don't think that they always provide the most concrete or most driving assessment of your online writing and your messages and whatnot. I think a lot of commenters... Frankly, a lot of commenters are your friends, family, and people that want to get on your radar. So they will comment on your blog so that you'll know who they are. And then, unfortunately, with a small percentage of them, within 2 weeks, you have an email in your inbox asking to help pitch the latest ebook that they just wrote.
You know, I've actually been lucky in that the people who comment on Foolish Adventure are actually there looking for answers and stuff. I have not had anyone, you know, knock on wood, I have not had anyone come there trying to connect with me so that they could pitch something. The only person who connected with me to actually connect with me was Dan Andrews.
That worked out pretty well.
Yeah. He connected with me on Foolish, and then we started Skyping, and then it got to where we were Skyping almost weekly there for a while, and became really good friends out of this whole process. So that was amazing. I loved that. And that's the kind of thing that I wish more would happen, but I still love answering the questions, and because that's what Foolish Adventure's for, is to help people actually succeed at what they want to do in life. So I can't complain too much.
I think that in that respect, it's definitely, it is great to have people commenting at that level. What I was more so getting across is they don't always provide the most, they're not going to critique your work so much.
You're right.
They're looking for their critique back. Exactly.
Right.
So for critiquing and for work like that, I actually have a mastermind group that I formed, much like you have formed some mastermind groups on your own in times past and present. And fortunately, mine was small. It was just myself and two other women who were online writers as well. And we kind of committed to each other that we would have complete, frank commentary and honesty on each other's presence and the way that we built ourselves and everything else. So you kind of built in this advisory panel that I could write to them and be like, here's, you know, a product that I'm thinking of launching, or here's a project that I've just been asked to come on for. And they would do the same thing, and we could have a really open dialogue, knowing each other so well and what, you know, our core messages were, what our ambitions were, what we wanted from life. And we could kind of push each other towards making sure that posts that went out and, you know, moves that were made and everything that was happening was going to be in the best interest of both the person who was doing it and the audience that they were serving.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. I got to meet John McIntyre, who's working on a bunch of tropical MBA stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, well, have you had another copywriter come in and look over your sales letters? He's like, oh, no, I haven't. I don't know any yet. And I was like, well, then you need to network with some actual real copywriters, people who get paid to copyright, to come in and take a look at your sales letters, because it will improve your writing skill.
Absolutely. I think as a writer, especially an online writer, again, because you put so much of just the tone and the style of online writing, online writers have to put a lot of themselves into whatever they're writing. So it's a very vulnerable space to be writing in. It's very kind of in journalism, it's more of the opinion editorial type space where you're sharing your thoughts, your ideas, yourself. And that's sometimes really scary to have people come back at you, to put yourself out there like that and then say, and while you're at it, could you please tear me apart and leave me crying in a fetal position in the corner? I promise I'll get back up eventually.
You know, I actually, when I get like the, and it doesn't happen very often because I'm really open about it on the Foolish Adventure show, is that like I keep the critiques, not the critiques, like the big slams. Like one of my favorites was being called a $2 whore in an email.
You're at least like $4 to $5.
Yeah, so. at least, you know, at least a couple hundred pesos in the Philippines. So, I love those kind of things because it just lets me know that, you know, I'm striking some kind of chord out there that if you don't have someone who is unhappy with what you're doing, then you probably don't have a whole lot of people who are actually happy with what you're doing. They're like, it's okay, I like it, it's okay. So it'd be nice to get knowing that there's an opposition to what you're doing. And so sometimes people internalize that. They're like, oh my gosh, that I feel horrible now. And I don't think you should ever internalize just people who are being belligerent. But if you know some trusted people and they say, you know, I think this writing kind of sucks, maybe you need to change it a little or a lot, then those are the people you would want to listen to and internalize that.
I in my column on Forbes, I was basically brought in to write for and attract an audience that isn't Forbes regular audience. I write about like a lot of young professional modern women type issues, and I tend to get angry comments on practically every article I write. And it was one of the best, as silly as it sounds, it was one of the best ways for me to build out my voice there, even more so than my voice already was. And exactly for the reason you said, I could very quickly tell the kind of, on online they'll call them trolls, but kind of the people who are just there just making silly belligerent comments that just wanted to get a rouse out of you or just wanted to fight with you for reasons that I don't understand, but I feel that it probably has something to do with the fact they need to be hugged more in their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are, you know, those people I tend to ignore. But there are also some really, really good people that will comment or they'll email me personally or interact with me on like Twitter or Facebook that I really realize that their opposition and their disconnect and their being upset with something I've written has value. And that's something that is really important. And I think it's often ignored in a lot of the writing space is you'll hear from a lot of people like, oh, if people don't like you or they're against you, just ignore them. Like they're not part of your tribe. They're not part of the people you need to be listening to, but they are, as long as their concerns that are coming forward are valid. And it's definitely something that if you're a good writer, you're going to take into consideration and work on for your next pieces, both in the style of the writing pieces and the voice that you're writing them with.
Right, right. Oh, and speaking of, you know, Forbes that you've mentioned, I'm going to put a link to the article you did about Mylene.
Yes, I adore Mylene. She was, of course, the den mother of our tropical MBA Filipino adventure.
Yeah, yeah, she made it indispensable there. You know, she made everything so easy for us. And she's the proprietor of the Badlands Resort that we stayed at. And
yeah.
So that I loved that piece you did on her. And so I want, I'm going to make sure I link to that in the show notes so that people can go out and they get to see your writing and they get to hear a great story about how Mylene came up in the world.
Yeah, that's actually... My story on Mylene was a funny experience. I gave her the article to proofread, which I actually don't do with most of my interviews for any of my articles or sites. Usually I just kind of like, well, thank you for your time. I'm going to write up the article. It will post on Thursday. But I gave it to her to make sure that I got the details and information right, because the thing with Mylene... she's a native Filipino woman who has completely kind of clawed her way up from living in a shack that they built out of multiple materials on a remote island in the Philippines to owning multiple businesses and kind of like running the town that she's in.
Yeah, she's got a little empire.
She really does. I was amazed. If you needed anything, she was on the phone and within like 2 minutes you had it.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, but the thing with her, when I gave her the article, she came back at me and she said, you know, I can't believe this article. You're such a good writer. You made me sound so good. And that's a really important thing that I think is overlooked in writing is I really didn't make her sound good. I took what sounded good from her and put it in an article.
Right.
What's
that called? Like not burying the lead, you know? You put the good stuff out there, trim out the bad.
Yeah, and there was definitely some bad stuff in there. She's obviously had a lot of struggles in her life, and I wanted to include those. But you know, the biggest part of it was it wasn't my my writing was obviously part of it, but I wanted to make sure to profile someone accurately and in a way that really was what they were. And then people kind of come back and they're always amazed by it and think that it's somehow the writing is like this magical pill that someone handed them that made them sound good. But uh-huh. Really good writing just makes people sound like themselves. And if they're good people, that shows through. And that's definitely what that article on Mylene did.
Very cool. And so you're saying like very good writing. So I'm looking at my notes here and I have this word.
Trying to stream it back.
Yeah, yeah. It's my arch nemesis. It's called grammar. So I grew up in Southern Illinois and I had a really thick, like Southern style accent and that I really worked on for a lot of years. Sometimes it still comes out. You'll hear me say y'all and stuff like that. But I really worked on trying to get rid of that accent because it just made me sound dumb, especially since I had horrible grammar and still do. And I write the way I talk, which has, you know, a lot of bad grammar in it. So what can we do to improve our grammar, especially like guys who have grown up like me who, you know, I'm in my early 40s now. So it's like, oh, gosh, you know, changing those bad habits is pretty tough. So, but what can we do to improve the grammar in our writing?
Well, I'll definitely start by saying one of the things that I do for people is editing. So I am a grammar princess, I guess you could say. I live, breathe, eat grammar, which is hilarious because similar to you, I grew up in rural and then suburban Maine. When I went to school, they actually sent me to a speech therapist because they thought I had a speech impediment. And they realized in this new suburban school system, I didn't have a speech impediment. It's just the rural area that I grew up in, Maine, didn't really use the consonant R in a lot of their words. So I had learned words incorrectly. So very similar to you, I have to make a very pointed effort to make sure that when I'm speaking, when I'm writing, that there's proper grammar involved in it. Because as much as I do think grammar is sometimes overrated in a lot of spaces, I also recognize as a writer, you probably should use good grammar whenever you can.
Right, right.
So for me, I learned a lot about grammar, both by observing and kind of just in the art of practice. And when I say observing, I read a ridiculous amount. There was a joke in the Philippines. I didn't come out of my room one morning until almost 11:30, and everyone was like, "Oh, Alyssa, where were you last night? What's going on?" And I was like, "I started the second book of the Hunger Games and I couldn't put it down." So I spent half a day in this gorgeous Filipino island resort, curled up with my Kindle reading.
That happens a lot in this household too.
So the more you kind of are exposed to good writing that's edited well, the more you kind of start picking up on some of the things that are good grammar and some of the things that you do that probably aren't as much good grammar. You know, as you said, you've picked up on it yourself, just knowing what some of your quirks are from that Southern Illinois kind of upbringing. And you probably make a very concerted mental effort as you're doing stuff to make sure not to let that kind of bleed over into the stuff that you're doing very much.
Yeah, as best I can. One of the things that I think the book was called Elements of Style by yes. White and Strunk.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that a bunch of years ago because I wanted to actually get better at writing. And I think that's a book I probably need to go back to like at least once a year. So I think I'll pull that off my shelf and dive into that this afternoon.
I think that's a really good one. I am going to completely obliterate the name of the book. I think it's called like Eat, Shoot, Leaves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Eat, Shoots, and Leaves.
Yeah. That one's, I like that one a lot because it's a much more accessible book, I feel, than The Elements of Style. It's written in a way that everyone wants to read it rather than written in a way that my English 170 literary theory professor would have loved. That is actually the first time I read Elements of Style was in English 170 at the University of Maine. So there's also a fantastic podcast. I adore her. She's a sweetheart. It's the Grammar Girl podcast.
Yeah.
They're super quick little snippets, not more than usually 5 to 7 minutes. And she goes over different common grammar mistakes that happen in modern language and kind of gives you a quick education on what the difference between there, and there is and different things like that, again, in a very accessible way. And she's doing it off the cuff on current times. So it's definitely stuff that is a lot of people are doing in grammar. Because that's the other really dangerous thing with grammar is as soon as grammar gets corrupted on a mass level, everyone starts using bad grammar and the bad grammar suddenly becomes the norm for grammar.
Right.
You know, there's definitely, I write with a lot of colloquialism and slang. And that's just my writing style. People who have really, really good grammar probably read some of my articles and posts, and they have the fingernails on the chalkboard reaction because I write in a way that's exactly like you said, I write how I speak.
Right.
And I definitely don't speak with the most proper grammar in English.
Yeah. Well, neither. I definitely don't. So, but at least you turned it into actually good writing. So I've got a question here that I think kind of, it was meant to bring all this, like the how-to that we've been talking about into like a cohesive theme. And that was, how does what you write and how you write affect your brand or actually better, how what kind of opportunities can it build?
Well, I think it depends, again, heavily on that kind of core message that you've got for your brand and yourself. Because whatever you're doing in your writing style, tone, voice, everything, also needs to serve that brand. So, for example, the Foolish Adventure Show, if I were to come in and ghostwrite for you, I would make sure that the style that I was using for writing isn't going to be, you know, very proper, corporate, vetted language, because that's not who you are.
Right.
It's very similar when I write for myself or when clients hire me. When clients hire me, I turn away more clients for copywriting work than I take on for clients for copywriting work, because I'm very quick to say that my style of writing is not going to fit well with the image that they are trying to build for themselves. Which, when you're starting out as a writer, I definitely didn't do that when I was starting out. I definitely liked eating and living under a roof. So I pretty much wrote for anyone and adopted voice and did that sort of thing the way that it needed to be done. And now I've gotten to the point, as I've established myself a little bit more, that I know that I'm never going to be the person, or more so, I don't want to be the person that writes that corporate staid language for people on their sales letters, on their sites, on their articles. I much prefer being the open, colloquial, conversational writer.
Well, it tends to convert better too. Yeah, and that's what I try to get a clients that I've had through when I was operating my marketing agency. If you let us have a little more fun in what we're putting out, you're going to get more people to engage with your website. You're going to get more people to engage with your marketing campaigns. If you keep it with this whole, oh, we got to be all buttoned up, then you're going to bore everybody to death, and then they're not going to convert.
And that's absolutely, absolutely true. I find that the best, most compelling writing, especially in modern writing, is the stuff that is very, very fun and very light, very open. You can discuss really heavy topics in a light and open way. I think that a lot of people get themselves too tied up and they want their writing to, exactly as we were talking about before, have the perfect grammar and have the perfect structure and have this perfect presentation that they put out for their articles and for their blogs and everything. And the reality is, people don't want to read perfect. If we wanted to read perfect, we'd go back and read the Elements of Style on a daily basis, because that sounds fun. And I'm sure that there are people who do that. One of them, but I'm sure they exist out there. There's many people making this world go round. But for most people, when they ask me how are they going to get started as a writer or how are they going to get better as a writer, the advice that I give the most, and it's really, really, really annoying advice, I completely understand that, but I just lack better advice to give at this point in time, is to write more, but not sit down and, you know, copy 1,000 words of a sales letter every morning, or not sit down and try to put out 1,000 words of content of forcing yourself to do it. It's more so, write more for what you want and what you know your audience wants, and get in the habit of doing that more. And as you start doing it more, you start becoming more comfortable with writing, you start becoming more comfortable with your own ideas, start becoming more comfortable with your profile, your brand, your company, and that starts showing. And that's when you really start garnering an audience. That's when you really start getting traction. That's when you really start evolving as a writer.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, because I was actually going to ask for a final wrap up, and then you did it without, I didn't even have to ask. So that was fantastic.
We've spent so much time together, Tim. It's just
you just read my mind.
Exactly.
Okay, so if anybody wants to get a hold of you, ask you questions about writing or anything, how could they do that?
The best way to get in touch with me, there's two. The first would be to visit my website. It's kind of my dump all page. It's www.elissadoucette, which is spelled super confusing. It's E-L-I-S-A D-O-U-C-E-T-T-E .com. And that's kind of where you can find all of the places that I write, all of the different work that I do. And otherwise, if you don't want to have to go to a website and track me down through that, I love Twitter. And I will respond to anyone on Twitter. I love having conversations on Twitter and meeting people. And that is just at Elissa Doucette. Again, E-L-I-S-A-D-O-U-C-E-T-T-E.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So before we end the show, I want to get over to a customer question that came in on the voicemail that's on the Foolish Adventure Show website. So let's get into this question and I'll answer it right after.
Hi, Tim. My name is Matt Johnson. I enjoy the show a lot. I've been listening to it for all the way since you had Izzy and for a couple of years now. And my question is on pricing. I'm looking at starting a membership site. I'm actually well in the process of developing the product and building my list and doing a variety of marketing tactics such as a podcast and other things. But my question is doing a month-to-month recurring model versus a one-time price. I'm looking to develop more of a premium product, and I'm just not sure which one ultimately is better. I know that the continuity model is good, but your turnover rates, from everything I've heard only from this show and others, is 3 to 4 months, and I'm not sure that I could probably make up what I could do charging a higher price one time from the onset. So I'd appreciate your thoughts on this.
Okay, Matt, that's a great question. Pricing is really tough, but your question is not really so much about pricing as it is about the structure of how you're going about getting paid. So first is the content. Is your content something that's going to go on essentially for a very long period of time? If so, then that's something that is great for a continuity program, a membership site. You can also develop a course where you get paid over, say, a six-month period, a limited membership site. You could do that if you've got, say, six modules and those modules get delivered over 6 months. This could be 3 months, it could be five, it could be 12. You need to decide how much content you have and what's the best delivery mechanism for the people to be able to learn the most from it. The other is if you've got just content that is a finite course. It goes from point A to point B and then it ends. Then that is best sold as one package. You could spread it out, but I really don't see there's a real reason to do so. It makes better sense just to sell it as one thing. And maybe it comes with payment plans because the price is so high. Maybe the price is, $2,000. So maybe you need to give them payment options of three payments over 3 months or something. But the actual course itself is delivered all in one piece. So that's what you need to really be thinking about, is what's the best way of delivering this content and what's the best way of providing value to your customer, not so much about how you're going to get paid. But onto the topic of membership site retention, 3 to 4 months. Well, 3 to 4 months tends to be for really shoddy sites and for porn sites. Porn sites tend to have about a 3 month cycle where they lose their members. So unless you're creating a porn site or you've got really bad content and you're not actually connecting with your members very well, then yes, you'll probably have very low retention. But if you are able to keep people engaged in your content, if you are able to engage with your members and give them a reason to keep coming back, that really comes down to the value that they're getting. If they feel like they're always getting value for the money that they're paying, they're going to keep coming back and they will stay for a very long time. So that's what you really need to be focused on, not so much about what you hear are the averages of something, because every membership site is actually different in the way they're implemented and the way they're run. So I would first deal with the content and the value you're delivering before making a judgment as to whether it's going to be a continuity program or if it's going to be just a finite course. Then you can get to your pricing, and that's going to be based upon what kind of value you're bringing to your marketplace. All right. Hopefully that answers your question, Matt. So that brings us to the end of the show. So hopefully you've gotten a lot of value from this episode. You've gotten techniques on how to become a better writer. You've learned a bit about how to choose whether or not to do a continuity program or a finite course. And I want you to be able to go out there and start taking action on this, become a better writer, become a better value creator in your market. And until the next time,
enjoy your foolish adventure.
You've just listened to the Foolish Adventure Show with Tim Conley. To get more straight talk about making money online and building a successful internet business, go to foolishadventure.com. There, you can opt into the Freedom File newsletter. You'll also get access to the Foolish Guide to Launching Products video training module, over an hour and 20 minutes of business building knowledge that can generate tens of thousands of dollars for your new product. Enjoy your Foolish Adventure.